Namo myoho renge kyo, namo myoho renge kyo, namo myoho renge kyo. Hi everyone. Thanks for being here, my friends, new friends, old friends, everyone alike. I deeply appreciate your commitment to your enlightenment, your practice of Lotus Sutra Buddhism, albeit with the scholarship from Shakyamuni all the way to Nichiren, right? And we are all doing as Nichiren exhorted us to, emulating his practice, right? So, getting right into it today, back into chapter 7, the translation, apparitional city. This is just different than I'm used to reading in other translations, but yeah, the apparitional city. You should know, Shakyamuni continues, O monks, the Tathagata, through skillful means, deeply penetrates the dispositions of sentient beings. Kind of obvious, maybe, by now. But, in other words, he speaks to the capacity of the people. He detects, he can surmise from conversations, from knowing them, from the culture that they come from, right? That they have certain beliefs and stigmas and ideas that detract them, obfuscate, samsarically get in the way of understanding their own enlightenment, understanding their own capacity for Buddhaness. This is the seventh chapter into the Lotus Sutra. He's still talking about it. Not because he's making excuses for himself, but he keeps reminding his audience. Knowing their inclination toward the inferior teachings, and that they are deeply attached to the desires of the five senses. What are the five senses? They're the first. They're the skandhas, right? Those mechanisms of attachment, those samsarically created and constantly working visual attachment, oral attachment, sensation attachment, emotional attachment, taste, smell, right? The sense organs. Why do you need organs if not to interact with the physical universe? It's how we're built. Yeah, I know you guys have that. I didn't have to, you know, gee, look, humans. It's what we are, samsaric beings. That's what we have to transcend, not get rid of, but transcend in order to open our mind's capacity. Oh, this is how everything works. I don't have to own and possess. Moment to moment, I possess everything. Everything is a matter of moment to moment instantiation of the same energies you and I and everything in the universe is made of. Albeit in slightly different conditions, tendencies, formations, agglomerations. And out of all this magnificent apparatus, from asteroids to you and I, am emerging a consciousness of sheer non-physical witnessing of the process itself. With that consciousness, I can transcend samsara. Not get rid of it, but alter my participation, my engagement with this process, the engine of life. He teaches nirvana for their sake. The Tathagata teaches the liberation from samsara for the sake of those who are engrossed in samsara. If they listen, they will accept it. Another reason why the first thing we do when somebody is curious and asks us about Buddhism is chant. Keep that door cracked open. Take that curiosity and give it back to them. This is what you can do. Suppose in a desolate, fearful place, there were a dangerous road 500 yohanas long. There is a large group that wants to travel along this road to reach a place where there is a great treasure. They have a leader who is wise and penetrating and who knows the passable and impassable parts of this dangerous road very well. Although he wants to guide these people past the danger, they become exhausted along the way. Addressing the leader, they say, "We are extremely tired and frightened. We cannot go any further. We are still far away from our destination, and we want to turn back." The leader, knowing many skillful means, thinks, "These people are to be pitied. They're low in conviction, yeah? How could they want to turn back and abandon the great treasure?" Right? After thinking this, the leader, through his skillful means, creates a city, envisions a city 300 yohanas away along the dangerous road. He addresses the people saying, "Do not be frightened. Do not turn back. You may now stay in this great city and be at your leisure. If you enter this city, you can be comfortable and at ease. Once you are able to go on and reach the treasure site, then you can depart once more." So he gives them something, an easier goal to attain, this wonderful city where you can rest, gather your thoughts, satisfy your samsaric desires. And then we'll go on. Oh, is that closer than turning back? Yeah. Then the exhausted people rejoice greatly. "Oh, well, you should have told us that before." And praise this unprecedented experience, saying, "We are now free of this evil road and will be comfortable and at ease." Then they proceed to the apparitional city and enter it. They believe that their hardships are over and feel at ease. Then the leader realizes that they are rested and their fatigue has gone. He immediately makes the apparitional city vanish and says to the people, "All of you, come along." They're looking around, "What happened? Where'd the city go?" "The treasure site is near. I made that great apparitional city only in order to let you rest." So he manifested an image in their mind and made them believe, like a mirage, that they were actually in a resting place. No longer necessary, or maybe even more to the point that they wouldn't want to leave that rest. He gets rid of it and wakes them up, and they're like, "Oh, crap. We got no excuse to turn back now, right?" "Oh, monks, the Tathagata is exactly like this." That's an interesting point. So now he's saying all those skillful means, those earlier teachings, Hinayana, Agama, you know, all of the periods of teaching before the Lotus Sutra, he had set up apparitional goals. Not the true goal, not the full goal, not the complete and perfect enlightenment goal, but enlightenment reachable for their own understanding of their own capacity. Right? Let's make a goal you can attain, right? You don't teach a 5-year-old how to compose elaborate pieces of music or novels. You teach the alphabet. And once that's attained, then you teach making words with it. And then you teach putting words together. And then structure and grammar. Right? And then you can get to story writing and or just like music, right? Math, timing, blah, blah, blah. So Shakyamuni is saying, this is what I've been doing. Sorry, I should have turned off the phone. Well, it'll stop ringing in a minute. My apologies. So that's quite a piece of knowledge that hasn't really explicitly said that way in the past, right? All of you come along. The treasure site is near. I made a great... So, oh, monks, I am just like this. Now, not I, Tathagata. So in other words, anytime we enlighten ourselves, awaken our Buddha-ness, we can do the same with our lives. We and our Buddha-ness can give ourselves reasonable goals. And by moving toward those goals in life, in samsara, we can experience Buddha-ness, we can experience it at work, and the results are obvious to us. And we just keep expanding and seeing more and more until we reach the full potential of our lives. It's a simple mechanism, yeah? Now, for your sake, he has become a great leader who knows the long, dangerous, and evil road of birth and death and desires confusion, right? So the long road, the cycle, birth, death, birth, death, birth, death, birth, death, birth, death, rebirth, death, rebirth, death, rebirth, death, rebirth, death. I'm getting better at it. And the cravings and clingings that confuses us in our momentum, yes? You should leave it and be liberated. It says saved, but we know that's not the right word. If sentient beings hear only about the single Buddha vehicle, they will then want neither to see nor approach a Buddha. Because it's too far away. It's too conceptually, oh gosh, I'm tired already. They will think that the Buddha path is long and attainable only after enduring severe and protracted suffering. Now think about that statement in another context. Those who still maintain that there's an afterlife and you have to be reborn 16 million eons of times in order to advance in your enlightenment and blah, 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 blah. No. They will think that the Buddha path is long and attainable only after enduring severe and protracted suffering. He's talking about those people. And he's saying the Buddha, knowing their minds, knowing that they were weak-willed, lazy, and of lowly aspiration, lazy, teaches them the two nirvanas through skillful means in order to let them rest halfway to the goal. Arhats, right? Once you've attained these disciplines for yourself and that whole last body thing, right? You've achieved a liberation of sorts, that nirvana with remainder. That's not the goal. That's the apparitional city. That's the temporary goal he gave so you guys could rest a bit and go, huh. Wow. And then, knowing that you actually can achieve something, you recognize how much you've changed your life, oh, there's so much more. Now I have the conviction to work toward that. That's the Lotus Sutra, the Myoho Renge Kyo. If there are sentient beings who abide in either of these two stages, the Tathagata immediately teaches what you have accomplished is not complete. The stage you abide in is close to the wisdom of the Buddhas. You should observe and consider that the nirvana you have obtained is not the true one. It is only through the power of the Tathagata's skillful means that the single Buddha vehicle is explained as three, Shravakas, Pratyekabuddhas, and ultimately Bodhisattvas. But those aren't the path. There is only one path. But you can perceive these stages, right? And an arhat is a fully accomplished Shravaka. He's not even, it gets mixed up through the years and traditions, whether Pratyekabuddhas or Shravaka, blah, blah, blah. It doesn't matter, because ultimately, that's only a place along the road. The Buddha is just like the leader, or that leader, who conjured a great apparitional city to let the people rest. Knowing that they were rested, he addressed them, saying, "The treasure site is near. This city is not real. It is only my invention." Skillful means. Thereupon the Bhagavat, wanting to elaborate on the meaning of this, further spoke in these verses. The Buddha, Mahabhijnana Bibhu, sat on the terrace of enlightenment for 10 kalpas. But still the Dharma of the Buddhas did not appear to him. What's Dharma? The experience, right? And he did not attain the Buddha path. The Devas, Naga kings, Asuras, and others constantly rain down from heaven, heavenly flowers, in order to pay homage to that Buddha. He had achieved something, but he hadn't achieved full, complete, perfect enlightenment. The Devas beat heavenly drums and played various kinds of music. The fragrant winds blew the withered flowers away, and then they rained down fresh, beautiful ones. After 10 intermediate kalpas had passed, he then attained the Buddha path. And all the Devas and humans became joyful and ecstatic. The 16 princes of that Buddha, surrounded by thousands of myriads of kodas of attendants, came to the place where the Buddha was. Having bowed until their foreheads touched his feet, they requested him to turn the wheel of the Dharma, saying, "O noble lion, fill us and everyone else with the rain of the Dharma. It is extremely difficult to meet a Bhagavat, since he appears only once in a very long time. To get the attention of the beings, the Buddha shook the entire world. The palaces of the Brahmas in the 500 myriads of kodas of lands in the east were illuminated as never before. All of the Brahmas, seeing this phenomena, came to the place where the Buddha was. They reverently scattered flowers and offered him their palaces, requesting the Buddha to turn the wheel of the Dharma. They praised him in verse. The Buddha knew that the right time had not yet arrived. And although he had been asked, he sat in silence. The other three directions, the four remaining quarters, and the upper and lower regions were all like this. All the Brahmins scattered flowers, offered their palaces, and requested the Buddha to turn the wheel of the Dharma, saying, "It is extremely difficult to meet a Bhagavat. We entreat you to open wide the gate to immortality." We've discussed the meaning of immortality in this context, yeah. "And turn the wheel of the highest Dharma through your great compassion." The use of the word immortality, by the way, still reckons with the attachment of body, the physical samsaric world. That's why it's an odd choice. And I seem to have to explain it every time we come up on it because it's confusing. We should use a different word, right? The Bhagavat, having immeasurable wisdom, accepted their request and expounded various teachings such as the Four Noble Truths and the 12-linked chain of dependent origination, the Nidana, saying, beginning with ignorance and ending with old age and death, all these derive from birth, the original attachment to physicality as the end-all be-all of life. It's not. It's the physical component, the samsaric component, but that ain't it. You should know about such miseries. So in the one sentence, he's combining the Nidana, the Four Noble Truths, and he's saying, like the First Noble Truth, simplified, is life is dukkha, right? It's suffering. But life isn't suffering so much as the idea of life we have in samsara is based on physicality, and that is what precipitates suffering. And that's what the Four Noble Truths says, right? When the Buddha expounded this teaching, 600 myriad of kotas of trillions of people attained the complete extinction of all suffering. They became enlightened, says Arhats here, but it's not quite right. The translation committee is still influenced by older teachings. They're not getting the depth of this very Lotus Sutra that they're translating. How can it be? And yet, Nietzsche makes it blindingly obvious. So did Tendai. At the time of the second teaching, thousands of myriads of people, equal in number to the sands of the Ganges River, unattached to any existing thing, also attained enlightenment. After that, an incalculable number of beings attained the path. The path. Even if one were to count for myriads of kotas of kalpas, one could not finish counting their number. Then the 16 princes renounced household life and became shramaneras. They all asked the Buddha to expound the teaching of the Mahayana, saying, let us all of our attendants, let us and all of our attendants attain the Buddha path. What is the Buddha path? It's not arhatship. It's bodhisattva. It's not even Buddha. It's Buddha in samsara, a bodhisattva. We entreat you to let us obtain the Bhagavat's eye of wisdom supreme in purity. The Buddha, knowing the minds of his children, because Buddha isn't a person, and the sentient capacity of Buddha includes, and in fact is emergent of, all sentient minds. So, to use the word children, is a samsaric term, maybe falters a little bit, but then what word would you use? And their past conduct taught the six perfections and various transcendent powers through incalculable numerous explanations and various illustrations. Explaining the true teaching and the path to be practiced by the bodhisattvas, he taught this Lotus Sutra in verses, this Myoho Renge Kyo. This is the path to Buddhahood, to enlightenment, full enlightenment, perfect enlightenment. The path of the bodhisattva. Equal in number to the sands of the Ganges River. And after the Buddha taught this sutra, he entered meditation in a quiet place and sat with complete concentration in the same spot for 84,000 kalpas. Those shramanas, knowing that the Buddha had not arisen from meditation, taught the highest wisdom of the Buddhas to immeasurable kotas of beings, each sat on the Dharma seat and explained this Mahayana sutra. After the great parinirvana of that Buddha, They propagated the Dharma and inspired others. Each Shramanera liberated 600 myriads of kodas of sentient beings, equal in number to the sands of the Ganges River. Who made that inventory of the Ganges, do you think? Those who heard the teaching, right, it's... Those who heard the teaching after the Buddha's Parinirvana were always born together with their teachers in various other Buddha lands. These 16 Shramaneras completely cultivated the Buddha path, and now, in the 10 directions, they have attained highest complete enlightenment. So what is that all about? That is what you might have heard in stories about how we're born. How can human beings be so vastly different, and how do they collect in certain zones, right? Does that ever cross your mind? Why does this area of the world tend to have people of this kind of culture, this kinds of perceptions or lack of, right? Different colors of skin, different ways of seeing, different ways of describing, different languages. Why aren't we all just, if we're all just created from the same energies, why such variety? The 10 different directions, yeah? We collect around our own karmic engine, right? And those karmic engines have certain dispositions, certain tendencies and conditions. And so, of course, they kind of marry well together. Then those who heard the Dharma in the presence of each of these Buddhas, and those who were in the Shravaka stage, will gradually be taught the Buddha path. I am one of the 16. I have also taught you in the past, therefore, through skillful means, I will now also lead you to the goal, which is the wisdom of the Buddhas, not him Shakyamuni. The Buddhaness that has infiltrated, influenced the karmic stream of which we're all in similarity, instantiating moment to moment to moment to moment. And the more you practice and the more you understand that, the differences that we perceive in samsara between our karmic. Look at the way this sangha is growing. It's a perfect example of this. The limitations, the samsaric limitations on our communication of this teaching is no longer limited to our geographic area. This sangha is all over the world. So the, quote, differences, they're just melting away. They certainly don't get in the way of this teaching. You see? The more we grow this sangha, the more we grow our practice, the more conviction we have in our practice, the more we achieve our full expression of karma while realizing that it is not just ours, that the karma we're expressing is of everything and everyone, the differences simply become less and less obstinate, right? They obfuscate very little. As our clarity of mind grows, there are less hidden shadows and corners, just like the light in our attic. If we now, every year, add another bulb in the attic, and when we switch that light on, we see more and more of every corner of the attic, this is growing our life potential, yeah? And there is less and less to surprise us, to feel different or outside of, right? Through these former causes and conditions, I will now teach the Myoho Renge Kyo. in order to let you enter the Buddha path. Do not be worried or frightened. Suppose there were a dangerous road in a deserted wasteland far away where there were many harmful beasts. This is neither water nor grass. There is neither water nor grass. It is a fearful place for human beings. Innumerable thousands of myriads of beings wish to pass along this dangerous way. But that road is very long, some 500 yojanas. Then there is a leader, endowed with deep wisdom and knowledge, discerning and resolute, who saves or liberates the people from various calamities when they meet with danger. The people all get tired and address the leader, saying, "We are all now totally exhausted. We want to turn back from here." And the leader, him obviously, in this analogy, thinks, "These people are really to be pitied. They just have so little conviction. Come on. How could they possibly want to return and lose the great treasure? How could you practice all this time, learning and expanding your life, and at some point decide, it's not enough, going back, going to go back to suffering?" Obviously, you've forgotten how bad things were when you were suffering. And until you start suffering those same things again, you won't create the resolve to come back to this and start over. Why do you want to go through that cycle? Cycle. He immediately thinks of skillful means and how he should use his transcendent power. And he makes a great apparitional city with houses adorned and surrounded with gardens, moats, and ponds. There are fortified gates and tall towers, and it's full of men and women. When the apparition is complete, he immediately consoles the people, saying, "Look, do not be afraid. When you enter this city, you can each do as you please." Oh, cool. Look at this. All the people enter the city. They are all very happy and feel at ease, thinking they have been liberated. In other words, they suddenly think, "Well, this must have been the goal all along. This is the treasure. This is great." Da, 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 da. When the leader knows they are rested, he gathers them together and addresses them, saying, "Okay, you should now proceed. For this is just an apparitional city. You have not arrived anywhere yet. Seeing that you were extremely fatigued and that you wanted to turn back after coming halfway, I made this apparitional city through my skillful means. You should now strive to reach the treasure site together." Oh. "I am exactly like this. I am the leader of all. Perceiving that those seeking the way have become timid, have stopped halfway, and are unable to walk to the end of the dangerous road of the cycle of birth and death, and desires is confusion, right? Craving and clinging. I use skillful means and teach nirvana so that they may rest, saying, 'You have extinguished suffering and you have completed what must be done.'" But they really haven't. They haven't extinguished suffering. They were about to turn around to go get more of it. So he had to give them a sense of accomplishment. It's a good lesson for we bodhisattvas. Remember to congratulate people's progress. Just like you guys. When we go through these lessons and I get comments and emails from you, "Oh man, you're helping me understand." And then I'll get the very next email. "So when this happened?" And I say, "Well, you got half of it right. That's great. But not quite." And then I'll describe a little further. And that gives me more fodder to introduce into new videos. That's how the Sangha works. We all rub against each other as we polish our practice, yeah? Our understanding. "You've become timid and stopped halfway and are unable to walk to the end of the dangerous road of birth, death, and desires confusion. I use skillful means and teach nirvana so that they may rest, saying, 'You have extinguished suffering and you have complete what must be done.' Knowing that they have reached nirvana and attained arhatship. The Buddha immediately gathers the great assembly together and teaches the true Dharma, not arhatship. Illusion, you're not there. That's the apparitional city. He just dropped the mic on that moment, just walked right by it. Oh, now you understand why I've been saying what I've been saying about arhathood. Not complete, not enlightenment. Just a place to rest. All the Buddhas explain and teach the three vehicles through skillful means. Although there is only the single Buddha vehicle, they teach two in order to provide a place of rest. For your benefit, I now teach the truth. Well, seven chapters, it's about time. What you have attained is not the ultimate goal. You must call forth great efforts in order to obtain the omniscience of a Buddha. If you obtain omniscience and the qualities of the Buddha, such things as the 10 powers, and become endowed with the 32 marks, then you will have attained the ultimate goal. The Buddhas, the leaders, teach nirvana in order to let beings rest in comfort. When they know that they have rested, they lead them to the wisdom of the Buddhas. And that concludes chapter 7. Now, obviously, after shocking everybody in the audience, the next chapter, chapter 8, the 500 disciples receive their predictions. Here he goes, giving them a carrot. Yeah? Okay, now that you know you haven't reached what you thought you reached, look at what's coming. So this is the format, right? And this is why, over and over again, you read scholarship that says the first half of the Lotus Sutra is still preparatory, still leading to. But that's okay. Our minds, our samsaric minds, are pretty darn stubborn. So repetition, it's not a bad thing. All right. Thanks again. I appreciate your being here, listening, learning, asking questions, mostly your practice, right? This is an essential part of the practice. The other essential part, the most essential part, as Nichiren tells us, chant, 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 chant. The more recitation, the better. Namo myo renge kyo. Be kind to yourself. Take care of your health and those around you. Keep your practice strong. If you can support the channel, that's amazing bodhisattva work in itself, because we're all here to propagate, yeah? We can only propagate as we're able. Sometimes we propagate through our behavior, sometimes through our words, sometimes through the simple action of liking and subscribing. It does affect the propagation, the growth of this sangha, yeah? If you can afford financially, the books are an investment in your learning, in your practice, whether they're ebooks or print books. Certainly the mandala, you got to get that right, right? All of the podcasts are free. All of these videos are free, right? Even if you go to Patreon, it's just a portal to set you up a reminder and a monthly donation thing. So that's super helpful, right? I don't need to explain that to you. Anyway, your practice is the main thing. And these resources that I've put together are all to help amplify your conviction, resolve doubt, keep you practicing. So I really, really, really appreciate your involvement. Thanks again. We'll see you for chapter 8, which will be beginning in the next video. In the meantime, savor your practice, okay? Bye for now.